And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show for this Thursday, the 23rd of October, 2025. It is 4 minutes past nine, and it's good to be back, and I think I'm getting close to using the annual leave. I was talking on about how we're bad at it before I went on that short break, and I'm the worst, or one of the worst. In fact, lots of people working in our newsroom are poor at taking their annual leave. But anyway, here we are, we're back. Thanks to Michaela Clark, who sat in on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, did an excellent job as always. Listen, the lines are open for you right now. If you want to give us a call, Caroline's taking your calls as always, and Katie's in helping us today. 07491 25000 is the telephone number. If you want to WhatsApp and text, it's 086 60 25000, or if email is your thing, it's comments@highlandradio.com, and you can message us if you're listening to the podcast or overnight, the overnight replay, and we can pick up your comments or your requests or whatever you want to say to us and carry them into the next live show. Not too shabby, is it? And of course, just to remind you that if it suits you, and only if it does, it's a very visual show. Most of our guests say you can see them as well as hear them. So if you want to watch the program and you've got a smart TV or a Fire Stick, we're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. That's on your mobile devices as well. And we're on Facebook, our Facebook pages, and on the X platform. So there you go. Let's have a look at the newspapers this morning. We'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune, and the turnout for the presidential election on Friday could be the lowest ever, with an estimate of less than 35%. That's according to Public Opinion, and a distinct lack of interest in the candidates. Here in Donegal, writes John McAteer, the turnout could be under 30%. Those figures are based on the 2018 election, when the vote for the presidency dipped to an all-time low of 33.1% after 754 papers were deemed invalid. With a figure of 127,789, Donegal is the country's biggest electorate ahead of Kerry, where there are just shy of 118,000. Since last Thursday, when the Irish Times poll put Catherine Connolly on 38% and Heather Humphreys on 20%, the campaign has turned decidedly negative and bitter. There's a new opinion poll out as well. And, you know, it's not really just how many people turn out on tomorrow. It's, you know, who turn out. Is it people that are going to back Catherine Connolly? Is it people going to back Heather Humphreys? Who might be the most, or the less likely, who might support either candidate to not turn out? Because that is going to be a factor as well. Opinion polls are fine because you just answer a question or tick a box. It takes a bit of effort to go and vote. So we shall see. And just to remind you, by the way, that we have a special wee show for you on Saturday. We are going to be down at the Aura Leisure Centre. Now, it's not like a local election or a general election where we'll know results on site because the votes are sorted and tallied to some extent and then sent on nationally for an overall declaration. But we certainly shall get a sense of how Donegal voted, whether it's for Catherine Connolly, whether it's for Heather Humphreys, whether Jim Gavin's polling well. Who's to say? He's still on the ballot paper, don't forget. Big talk of spoil votes. Maybe we should get a sense of that. That being said, also, I don't expect there to be the same amount of tallies people as we would see at a general or local election. But we should still get a fair idea of what's going on in this county nice and early. So we're on air between 12 and 1 on Saturday, I beg your pardon. I'll be there. Dr. Joe Kelly will be joining me. Paddy Rooney will be joining me. Michaela Clark will be there as well, casting her eye over things that are happening on the ground. So we'll reflect a bit on the campaign. We'll reflect on the turnout and how things are going. We should get a good sense of where things are going around about that time as well. So it's just a 1 hour slot for you on Saturday, live from the Aura Leisure Centre. You'll be able to listen to it or watch it. Right, also, let's move to the Derry People Donegal News. Residents to fight active travel plans. Ballymacool residents are to vehemently oppose active travel plans on their doorstep, which would see the creation of a cycle lane and the construction of a parking bay to replace spaces currently outside their homes. Close to 100 people attended a public meeting in the Station House Hotel on Tuesday night, where residents voiced their fears that any such move would lead to a decimation of personal safety, human rights and an increased traffic flow. Donegal County Council is seeking to establish a high-quality, continuous footway and cycleway route along the R250 Ballymacool Road to promote active travel journeys from residential areas to key education, employment, commercial, retail and tourist destination destinations in Letterkenny. And there's very few projects, and we kind of get a sample of people, right? So I'm not saying I know what everyone's thinking, but there's very few projects that are developmental. Do you know what I mean? That ordinarily would be welcomed, where you're getting state money going into infrastructure. I can't think of very many projects, but I can think of certainly one other, but whereby the people that live in these areas and commute and know the places intimately, that the people would be so opposed to it. And not just opposed for NIMBYism, you know, not in my backyard stuff, but because of understanding traffic movement, understanding how and when people would travel from here to there, understanding, you know, ring roads, further infrastructure, bridges, all that type of stuff. It's kind of interesting. I can't think of many other projects whereby, you know, the public have an intimate knowledge of the situation and seem to be broadly opposed to it. And we've discussed that and understand exactly why, because we covered extensively on this programme. The Derry News this morning, a former Sinn Féin press officer who was jailed in November last for sexual communications with a child. Could have his licence revoked after he appeared at Limavady Magistrates Court charged with breaching the Sexual Offences Protection Order. Michael McMonagall, 44, whose address was formerly given as Limewood Street in Derry, was charged with breaching his SOPO by being in a chat room without permission of his designated risk manager on October 21st. A police officer told the court that McGonagall is a Category 2 registered sex offender who is prohibited from accessing chat rooms without permission of his designated risk manager. She told the court that on October 21, McGonagall was asked for his device for examination, and it was discovered he'd been on a site with a chat room element and had contacted a number of females. Okay. On to the Irish Times now, and another night of chaos in Dublin yesterday. Protests effectively at the City West Hotel, though it's framed differently in different media organisations. But reading on here, a major policing operation to protect residents at a centre for foreign nationals in City West, County Dublin, is set to remain in place over coming days amid fears violent scenes in Saggart may be repeated. Several hundred protesters gathered again at City West last night, with some throwing masonry, flares, glass bottles and wooden planks at members of An Garda Síochána. During the disturbance, a female Garda was treated for injuries after she was hit in the face with a projectile believed to be a bottle. A mounted Garda unit and a dog unit were deployed to the scene, along with the public order unit and a helicopter providing air support. The public order unit, or riot squad, set up a cordon at the junction at Garter Lane and City West Drive near the entrance to the hotel, and Garda used pepper spray in an attempt to push back protesters to outer roads. More people have been arrested overnight. More arrests are coming. And ironically, the greatest arrow in the bow, or whatever the phraseologies Garda have, is people themselves videoing these protests. It really is quite remarkable that, for instance, I was watching the night before last the police vehicle being set on fire, and the people are identifiable because there are people who, you know, are seemingly their supporters actually videoing the activity, and they're making absolutely thousands upon thousands of euro off social media. But it's that video that will end up being in court, and it happens over and over again, and no one's seeing the pattern. The greatest intelligence on Garda Síochána have, and the state have, is people themselves within it, citizen journalists, so to speak, videoing the activity. But it looks like that could rumble on. Excuse me. The Irish Independent. Five members of the Puska family arrived at the Central Criminal Court with their prison bags packed, ready to go to the women. To go to prison. There's words missing out of a lot of these articles this morning. Sorry, it's not just me. I'll try that one more time in case it is me. Five members of the Puska family arrived at the Central Criminal Court with their prison bags packed, ready to go. Indeed, that's correct. The women Lucia, Joseltina and Vieira clambered into courtroom number 19 first, their black holdalls stuffed tight. They placed them neatly on the wooden shelf before being before squeezing themselves into the accused bench beside an interpreter. And they ended up being sent to prison. These are family members who effectively were found to have interfered in the investigation into the brutal murder of teacher Aisling Murphy. So that's that story there. They're all getting custodial sentences, effectively. We're going to be talking about this potentially a little bit later on in the programme, and this is in the Irish Daily Mail. Now, only 24 properties, 24, only 24 properties are available to rent across the entire country, the Republic of Ireland, that is, that would qualify for the housing assistance payment. This is according to a new report. Now, the housing assistance payment is a payment put in place to assist people to get into accommodation, yet only 24 houses in the entire state are actually available to rent in that fashion. A study by homeless charity, the Simon Community, has found there were no properties at all available in 11 of the 16 areas surveyed. Just 24 homes were available to rent within any of the housing assistance payment limits, a drop of 25% or 8 properties since June, the Simon Community of Ireland's latest locked out of the market report for September shows. Now, maybe you are living this reality of you know, qualifying for HAP but unable to find a property, and can give us an insight into the story here in the Northwest. If you can, 086 60 25000 or give us a call on 074 91 25000. The Irish Farmers Journal reports two different stories, really, I suppose, on its front page in terms of what farmers are getting for their product. Severe milk price cuts have been imposed by Irish milk processors for the second month in a row. Tierlan and Derry Gold, two of the biggest co-ops in the country, are leading the charge with milk price cuts of 3.8 cents a litre and 3.57 cents per litre, excluding VAT, respectively, for September. These price cuts follow on from August, when both Derry Gold and Tierlan cut milk prices by 2.8 cent per litre and 2.38 cent per litre, excluding VAT, respectively. Also, though, on the front page, beef, quotes, got a significant lift this week on the back of very tight supply and positive price movement in the British market. Base quotes for bullocks have risen 20 cent a kilogram to 7.30 a kilogram and above this week, with heifers now trading to a high of 7.70 a kilogram base price in some factories. It seems to be all about supply and demand, oversupply of milk, less money, undersupply of beef, more money. I suppose that's general trading, general markets, isn't it? The Irish Daily Star this morning: energy suppliers are ripping you off, and the government is refusing to intervene. That's according to Sinn Féin. The party's energy spokesperson, Pádraig Daly, blasted Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil after it emerged wholesale electricity, which is the price suppliers pay, was down while consumer power bills remained high. Figures from the CSO, we read these out for you last week, revealed wholesale electricity prices fell by more than 16% into the year to September and are 75% lower than a peak in August 2022. Now, I heard an RTE expert come on and talk about this, and the no disrespect to the interviewer, but it was effectively come across as PR. And the argument was being made, well, Ireland's different, isn't it? Because we're on the northwest and, you know, this, that and thon. And, you know, infrastructure makes up a big portion of it and that needs to be spent. Yeah, but the cost of electricity, the wholesale price of electricity versus the retail price makes up around 45% of your bill. So there certainly could be some movement on that. And then if we're paying so much through our electricity bill for infrastructure, what was the extra 3.5 billion euro the government allocated in the budget? I think it was 3.5 billion for electricity infrastructure. So are we paying twice? Because that's our money, right? So if you're going to include it in the bill and use that as an argument for higher electricity, well, then surely you have to talk about the 3.5 billion of taxpayers' money that's also going into the infrastructure. And it was also stated that this new interconnector that we're going to have in to Spain in 2027, that it'll reduce prices. It will, in me granny, reduce prices. There's more to it than that, and we're not being told the whole story. There's just no doubt about that. Returning to the presidential election, and the latest poll is out. You're going out to vote tomorrow, at least 3 out of 10 of you might. Catherine Connolly has surged to a 19-point lead in the polls, while Heather Humphrey's campaign has stagnated. A Business Post Red Sea poll published last night revealed the independent Galway TD continued to outpace the former Fine Gael minister. Connolly is now on 44%, which is up from 36% from another poll earlier this month, while support for Humphreys remains unchanged on 25%. Former Dublin boss Jim Gavin, who dropped out of the race but remains on the ballot, is polling at 10%, while the undecided stands at 11%. The support for Connolly means, in theory, she could be elected on the first count if the vote goes the same way as the polling. But as I said earlier on, it really does come down to which support base is more motivated to vote. If they're equally motivated to vote, it might end up as the polls are. If Heather Humphrey's team is more inclined to vote, it could close that gap, or vice versa. Do you get where I'm coming from? But also, too, what is really quite remarkable is this is the first election that I've seen AI really sort of, you know, have a role whereby it's conned a lot of people. And a bogus deepfake video created by artificial intelligence that makes a series of false claims about the upcoming presidential election have been removed by some social media platforms. The Electoral Commission yesterday contacted social media parent companies about the videos after they emerged online. Meta, the company that owns Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp, immediately moved to delete the videos and suspend accounts posting them. I saw them. If you mark them as AI, they're not being... This is nonsense. If that video's posted on social media marked AI, it won't be removed. Google also confirmed yesterday that they had suspended a YouTube channel that had posted a number of the videos. Now, if you post them as the truth, it is problematic. But you might have seen the one where it claims that Catherine Connolly is stepping out of the election. Obviously, that is completely untrue. But AI has progressed to such a point now, especially this Sars 2, that really it's very hard to determine what's real and what's not real. And I saw a lot of people aghast at this, going, what is happening? I can't believe it. Why is it happening? And a lie travels quicker and further than the truth, doesn't it? So even though these have been taken down or removed, the impact has already sort of happened, hasn't it? All right, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000. We'd love your calls too. 07491 25,000. Amanda joins me on the show now. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, Greg.
Nice to chat to you. Now, you are opposed to a proposed wind farm in Drumquin. Talk to me about the plans.
Yeah. So really, I mean, we're a small village in Drumquin with just over 1,000 people, a really beautiful, quiet place to live. So in the past 2 weeks, we have just found out about 12 huge, 150-metre high wind turbines planned for the edge of our village. And worse than that, it's actually on a really ancient and special hill called Dunnery Hill. So it's going to tower over our village. We already have 41 wind turbines all around us in a small radius, and we feel that we've done enough for the green agenda already, and we're going to get 12 more right on top of our village. And we're just really cross about that. We're united as a village, but we're really cross with, I mean, there's a big German company, ABO, and Energia, which is American owned, and they're coming in walking all over us. They're big rich corporates. They just really want to make money out of everybody. And if you look at Drumquin, I don't know, Greg, if you've heard of the song The Hills Above Drumquin. But The Hills Above Drumquin, it talks about Dunnery Fort. And that Dunnery Fort means the fort of the king. And it's actually an old O'Neill's fort for hundreds of years before that. The hill itself is covered in peatland and nature. We've got a busy red squirrel population. There are red squirrels everywhere. And it's really, really special to us. It's just such an important, important hill. And we cannot believe that they're going to cover that in concrete and steel forever. It's a scar across the countryside. But, you know, more than that, our wee village is really prone to flooding. So every night again, the ferry water that we're on swells away up and it causes big problems to the village. And if they take away that peatland right beside us, we are going to be flooded far more and we're really worried about that. And then on top of that, the noise that comes from those turbines. You know, we're in a village, we're in an amphitheatre beneath it. So the village is right beside that hill. And because of the effect of the amphitheatre, it will boom around our village in an even bigger way. So we're just so worried, Greg, about that. We don't know what to do. We've tried, you know, we're trying everything with them to argue our case, but we're just the small people. You know, we're not the big people to try and do something with us. So we're just trying to do something. And even if you've any archaeologists out there, we're looking for help to really try to show our case. This is a special hill. This is an O'Neill's Fort Rath. Please help us to prove and show. Do not build on this hill. It's really special. But we've had enough. As a village, we've actually had enough.
Yeah, because...
So we can't take any more. That's where we're at.
Obviously, you've outlined, you know, quite clearly your opposition to this. But also, you know, generally speaking, it seems for quite a lot of people, the jury's out on wind energy and its development and on our reliance on it. You know, even... as a country, the Republic, for an example, we're told, or we have been told, that wind energy is so important, yet then we're told, well, it's not terribly reliable because of the infrastructure is not great. It's not reliable because the wind doesn't always blow, so we have to have interconnectors to Spain. So it's like two arguments. One argument when it's, you know, being proposed and those are pushing it, and then there's another argument, really, when you sort of get down to the nitty-gritty of the conversation, if that makes sense. As I say, for many, it seems... Wind energy is, you know, it's you can't rely on it. Is that part of the argument, yeah, or are you really speaking about it as a resident saying, look, this is our last hill, this is a historic hill, what the damage that will be done or could be done can't be undone?
Yeah, I mean, it's all of the above, to be honest. We're not really getting too much into the detail of the whole renewables thing because we're not experts in that. You know, we look to the experts to help us with these things. But what we would say is that we can't take any more. We've already got 40 around us. And, you know, no amount of discussion or thought about renewables would ever justify the torture of small rural communities like ours. It's just not fair. Why should people like us, you know, you look at us, for example, it's what you call the Starbucks principles. So because we're not a rich community, we're nowhere near a Starbucks, the big developers target us because they think they're not going to get any resistance. They try to gag us with small funds for local groups in the hope that we'll not shout out. But we are saying right here, as a village, Drumquin is not taking this. We are really cross. We are united against these big German and American corporates, and we're going to fight this one, and they're not bringing any more wind farms into Drumquin.
You know what? I mean, obviously, as you've said, there seems to be unity in the area. I'm not sure if you know, little incentives is sort of splitting the community at all. I'd hope not, whether the community was united for or against, if you know what I mean. But you also sound like it's a lonely enough campaign. Have you had any... or are you getting any support externally, political support, for an example? Is there any elected reps taking an interest in this? I mean, listen, the strongest voice is a united community, don't get me wrong, but also, too, it does help at least the morale to have some political backing.
It does help the morale. Do you know, Greg, we've had a few queries from a few of our local councillors, but they haven't really stepped up to the plate to help us with this one because we are lonely on it. And this is why they target small rural communities, because you're isolated, you're living in wee farms, you know, you don't have a big joined up voice, you're actually an easy target. So that's why they come for us, because they think, you know, they'll not, you know, you look around various parts of Ireland, you know, your big rich areas, they don't have wind turbines, the wee small ones where people think will be an easy touch, they will actually push that through. But you know what else happens? What also happens too is that they think that they will split communities because they have a few small farmers who can't resist the idea of having a good steady income out of turbines. They can't resist that, and it means then that they can try to split that community. They also try to split it by giving these funds for, you know, flower baskets and for village greens and all sorts of, you know, small things. Those small funds are used to try and gag us. It's a well documented thing that they do.
Well, whether it's intentional or not, it is going to, some of the stuff you've outlined there, it is going to have that divide and conquer effect. I'm not saying it's intentional, but if some landowners are benefiting from it, obviously you have to look after yourself. If you've been trying to fund a play area for years, and next thing you know, you do get some funding.
I
can't say it's intentional, but it certainly will have the effect of dividing and potentially conquering the community.
Yeah, but when you think about it, we already have 40 windmills, and we've already had funding from those wind turbines, and that's fine. You know, and you can't blame people for, you can't resist those bits of money that comes your way, and we completely understand it. But we actually have a very, very busy Facebook page. And if you go into Facebook and look at No More Wind Farms in Drumquin, you'll see that there's lots of support out there, you know, with thousands of views. And lots of people have been contacting me to say, you know, we're really scared out here. We're really nervous of speaking up because we don't want to be against our neighbours. You know, people in our polite country neighbourhood, you know, they're scared of falling out with their neighbours, so they do want to come forward. A lot of people, too, have small businesses, and they do not want to run the risk of losing business because, you know, there's some farmer or somebody that might be for wind turbines that they've run up against.
One woman could own the shop and her brother could own the farm. When you're talking about small rural communities, I think people would get that. I mean, obviously, visually, right, people have different views on wind turbines. But in terms of the ones that are there at the moment, the 14, it all depends on the proximity to the actual residential area itself. Like, is there noise pollution from them? Is there an annoyance from the current turbines that are there?
Well, firstly, the current turbines are slightly further away. Mm. They're more like sort of like 2 or 3 miles from us. But a lot of people in the village at certain times, even from those turbines, will hear them, particularly maybe at night when they're trying to sleep. They'll sort of hear that constant sort of small whir that comes from the rotators going around with it. And then you have the poor people who are right beside them. So are we neighbours? Are people who live up the road from us? This is right on top of them. In fact, there's some amazing footage online and YouTube where you can look at there's a collator couple down the road from us, that's not very far from Donegal either, whose lives have been made a misery by being surrounded with wind turbines. And even though they're not going to be right on top of me, I'm standing with my neighbours who will be even more miserable because they're right on top of them.
Right, okay.
We're really, really cross about what it's going to do to so many people's lives. It's not fair.
All right, if anyone wants more information, the webpage is No More Wind Farms in Drumquin. It's on Facebook, sorry. Most people are on Facebook, they can check it out. And we'll see where it goes from here. There's the impact on the value to property and all that type of stuff. It's easy for me, not close to a wind turbine or not close to the proposed site of a wind turbine, because you can be nonplussed, can't you, Amanda, if something doesn't affect you directly? You're obviously very community-minded. I am too, don't get me wrong. It's just not come across my space in reality. But what would I feel like if within, you know, a few hundred metres, effectively, there were proposals like this? All of a sudden, it'd be front and centre of my mind, and I would probably end up having far, far stronger views in relation to this. So there are that mixed people out there. You know yourself, it's right across the northwest. There are wind turbines everywhere. Okay, Amanda, people can, as I say, check out that Facebook page, No More Wind Farms in Drumquin. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
All right,
thank
take
you very
care.
Much, Steve.
Bye
Greg,
bye.
Thank you.
All right.
Just to tell you, people, get in there and get their objections made as well at the right time on the planning registers as well. Keep an eye open for them. But Greg, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for listening.
No, that's okay. No, it's important to listen. So obviously there is the environmental element of it. There is also concerns that the windmills will be on an ancient hill, though they're looking for maybe someone with a historic archaeological background to back them in relation to that. And there's also wildlife and what have you. But also too, as I say, I'm not pro, I'm not anti, there is an element of sort of the jury being out in terms of the actual efficiency of wind turbines. because they can't run all the time. You know, we've got no end of wind, you would imagine, yet we're still interconnected to Britain, and now we're going to be connected into Spain. So there's something not adding up there, isn't there? And our electricity prices, of course, are, when you compare the wholesale to the retail, one of the highest in the entire world. Welcome back. Right, some of your comments coming in so far this morning. A caller says, and keep them coming in to us, by the way, 086 60 25,000. In the terms of the riots, Greg, don't you think the riots in Dublin are just a ruse to allow the government to impose a curfew on the Irish people? Seems like a lot of it's just staged. I would bet that in a few weeks our government will impose an 8pm curfew. Well, I mean, I would never rule anything out, but no. I'm not sure how much faith you have in the government, but you might also text in to say that they couldn't organise a pee up in a brewery. Could they really concoct this to impose a curfew? What would be the advantage? You know, it would decimate businesses. It would decimate the economy. That doesn't make any sense. I don't think it's a ruse at all. I think something most horrific happened allegedly in that hotel. And people are very cross, people are very angry, and people came out to protest. And then what you have is you've got people who probably almost don't even know why they're out to protest, but they just see an opportunity to run amok and to chuck stuff at the guards. So it's a mix. Greg, will you address the brutal excessive attacks the Gardaí carried out on a journalist and the elderly that were caught in on video and are now viral online? Yeah, I saw some of these videos indeed, yeah. There's no justification for any excessive attacks. I know for a fact, all I can say, me, if I were protesting, maybe I'd be front and center. But if I weren't protesting, if I was just going about my business, if I was a journalist for GB News or a local lady going shopping at 10 o'clock at night, I wouldn't be anywhere near, 50 people with riot shields. Like, I would not be anywhere near them or try and pass them and say, you know me. There's no justification for any excessive attacks against anyone, for that matter. But if you're going to set up your camera right next to a active riot, I'm not saying you're asking for it, but you've placed yourself in a position of peril for the shots. And then you can't lose because you then get the story. Presidential election. Good morning, Greg. We've got two dangerous women to choose from. We've one woman, Catherine Connolly, who can't say what a woman is. She hasn't a clue. I haven't seen any recent quotes from her in relation to that. Then we have Heather, a woman who voted yes during the referendum. So how honestly can anyone, never mind any woman, vote for either of them? They care nothing about women or their rights. Stand up and spoil your votes, ladies. Well, again, spoiling the votes actually hands either the two of them the candidacy. So that's... again, it's up to people whatever they want to do, but if you don't want one of them two in, spoiling your vote is literally saying, there you are, have it, okay? You're there for 7 years, maybe 14. But it's up to everybody else what they do. That's been the big debate, though, and that's why there was an ain't through motion in the Dáil yesterday trying to reform or lead to a reform of how candidates are chosen, because, and I've said it on this programme quite a number of times, there's quite a few people that just feel they're not represented by the two candidates, or indeed the three candidates when there were three that are there. They just feel that they don't speak to them, they don't represent their views, and that's why the turnout might be low. It's always good, I think, to have sort of a broad sort of political spectrum to choose from. In relation to the Aisleen Murphy case, morning, Greg, why are the family members who covered up evidence in the murder of Aisleen Murphy allowed to continue to live in this country, living off the taxpayer, in jail now, which is also paid by the taxpayer? How is this justice? They should be deported, thank you. I don't know what their status is in terms of their citizenship, etc. So you can't, we don't want a system, do we, whereby people be deported if they're Irish citizens. I don't know the ins and outs of that. To be honest with you. But I know there are many people out there that would share your point of view. Just a quick announcement before we take a break and welcome our next guest. There's a coffee morning in aid of MEVA first responders. It's on Sunday the 26th of October and it runs from 12 p.m. until 2 p.m. and it's in the Carrigar Parochial Hall. Donations welcome at the Dáil with raffle prizes to be won on the day. Demonstrations will be given on how to use a defib and also lessons in CPR and how to deal with choking incidents for anyone who wishes to avail of these on the day. And that's great, I think. There's defibs everywhere now, which is brilliant, and we need more. And there's efforts underway on Sunday to get one at Errigal. But how do you use one? Would you be confident enough to sort of access it? If you have any concerns, get along to the parochial hall in Carrigart this Sunday between 12 and 2. Support the MEVA first responders, but also, you know, get a bit of confidence on how you might use a defib, how to actually properly do CPR, or for that matter, you know, what do you do in a choking incident? All right, we'll be joined by our next guest after these. I'm joined in studio now by Minister James Lawless, Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science. Minister, good morning to you. We've spoken remotely on a number of occasions. Great to have you in studio. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. Yeah, great to be here with you. I've participated in the programme, as you say, a number of times online, and I'm in Letterkenny today, and I said, look, I'll come into studio and say hello. I'm here to launch the new, turn the sod on the new ATU Letterkenny campus building, new library, IT and education building, 25 million investment here in Letterkenny. And that's alongside the new vet college, which I'll be opening. I'll be back again in a few weeks' time to relaunch that. And there's been a lot of investment in between the ETB, which serves 25,000 learners here in Donegal, between the ATU campus continuing to expand, and indeed things like the regional sports hub that your local TD and Minister Charlie McConnellogue secured 9 million funding for just recently, which is also on the cusp of ATU campus there. So look, a lot going on in the educational space. New apprenticeships coming on stream here as well. We have the electrical, metal fabrication and refrigeration, significant investment there, 27 million funding for those in Donegal. And that's the first of its kind outside Dublin or Cork. So I suppose in the round, a lot of investment on the educational field in Donegal. And I'm delighted to be here today to continue that support.
Yeah, and it's brilliant, and investment should be recognised. But there is also a significant gap between, say, for instance, spend per student in our region versus the rest of the country. You contest that, do you?
Well, I suppose I don't necessarily contest it.
I'm not about sort of capital spend. I'm not about sort of the spend. But also to say, for instance, the ATU have been, you know, campaigning for a long time for the approval of professors and everything that might bring. And then, of course, the positive impact, all of the investment you talked of there, but also an increased spend per student and the provision of professors and what have you. You know, that would have a regional uplift. Where are we in relation to, you know, maybe addressing that regional imbalance, if you admit it's there, and also to the appointment of professors and all that would bring with it as well?
Yeah, so I suppose, I suppose, just not to be too complicated about it, but I think in terms of spending per rata, per head, there's a lot of money being put into the North West at the moment. I just stepped through things like the Vet College, the Regional Sports Hub.
Brilliant, the apprenticeship. The Vet College is huge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, so that is real investment by the state into the region. But in terms of, there are some systematic issues with the technological universities that they're still, getting established. They were set up by the government in 2018 and it took a couple of years, I suppose, to get them up and running. ATU is now going really well. I met Orla Flynn last night, the president. I'm at a conference with her again today, as well as the building openings. And I'm really committed to the Technological University professorships. I think it's an absolutely key part.
What is the hold up there? Because you mentioned the Vet College, and we're lucky we're going to have a professor heading that up, right?
Yeah.
But that's because he's seen an opportunity. It's not because he's going to get the pay scale of a professor. So when will we iron out those kinks then that we can...
Yeah, so I was part of the team that negotiated the programme for government. I made sure that was in the programme for government. And to be fair, there was no pushback from colleagues. Everybody around the table in government wants this to happen. It is technical, though. I mean, there's industrial relations issues. It's introducing a new pay grade that was never there before into the technological universities. When they were ITs, historically, they wouldn't have had professors. So putting a professorship in place is absolutely critical and will happen. And I'm very determined to make that happen as soon as possible, hopefully before Christmas, actually. But it is, I suppose, there's industrial relations issues. We've seen some IR issues with it down in Kerry. There was a vote recently with the union there. There's been other issues. And then the Department of Public Expenditure always have to have, I suppose, what they would call stability in the system, and there's some talks ongoing with that department in terms of how the grade takes its place amongst the other grades and where it sits in the wider public pay structures. So, you know, I suppose in short, it's complicated, but certainly as far as I'm concerned as a minister for the sector, I'm absolutely championing it, working with the industry, as in the TUs right across the country, because we need it. As you said, the vet school, also pharmacy. I know ATU want to get accreditation, rightly, for that, so do I. I don't want any more kids going to Poland or going to Scotland to study veterinary when they can do it in Donegal, when they can do it in Waterford.
It should be a choice, not
a by choice, if they want, absolutely, but not because there's no places here.
Exactly,
we want to create the places. And right across medicine, there's a rural medicine program starting in Galway now. We have the pharmacy programs, physiotherapy. Also, we have an all of government priority around disability. That means people like physios, occupational therapists, speech and language, and all those areas need accreditation. So it's absolutely key. And also, I'm a big believer in research and innovation being an economic driver, and that is led by professors in the regions. We have so much industrial activity here. We have Seagate just across the border. We have semiconductor specialties there. We have MedTech here. We have FinTech here going on in Donegal and in the Northwest. That would really benefit from having some professors, some research leaders in ATU, and I'm determined to make it happen.
The significance, as you see it, of the inaugural NW 2025 Shaping Our Digital Futures Conference. Futures,
yeah. So look, this is, I think, a really timely conference because we're all coming to terms with digital, with artificial intelligence, with what it means. The best quote I've heard on it to date is, AI won't take your job, but somebody with AI skills might take your job. So it's not that we're going to be displaced, but you know, people that have the technology, familiarity will be leading in the skills of tomorrow. So what do we do then as a government? We make sure people are skilled up. We have two different training needs. We need to have experts in the area, and I think actually we have a lot of those coming through. But on a more basic level, we need to make sure that in every industry, people have, no more than people now can use a personal computer, you know, don't have to think about it. People use email every day. They use their smartphones every day. It's just the latest in technology evolution, but we need to provide courses to people, familiarity to people. So we can take away maybe the more mundane aspect of certain jobs and automate it. So look, change is a good thing. Change is positive, but we need to move with it and we need to train people up. So part of the conference is talking about that. We have a digital strategy in my department. We have an artificial intelligence strategy. And I'll be work. I suppose I'll be sharing some thoughts on that. And listen, I'm listening. I mean, part of my job is to listen and learn myself. So I'll be listening to experts at that conference today. But there is a really strong synergy right across Donegal, Derry, the Northwest, and it's cross-border as well. Peace Plus is funding part of it. But I've been across, I met the Minister for the Economy, Minister Archibald, recently. And I think that there's real, you know, with Ulster University and ATU, there's a real opportunity for partnerships there. And also just building connectivity. Obviously, Greedore is a great airport up and running, but we're getting Derry back up on track now, which is part of the Shared Island as well. When I was up here last year, I was here in the Department of Transport. And I'm very aware that we need to improve the connections to the Northwest. Yeah. So the new airport, the Derry Dublin route coming back on stream, it's, I think, will help with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Are you voting for Heather Humphreys tomorrow? No, go on. I'll remind the listeners what's happening tomorrow to give you a chance to have a sup of that coffee, or you'll be out the door before you do. Are you voting for Heather Humphreys tomorrow?
So I suppose my vote is between me and the ballot box. It always has been, always will be.
Are you endorsing Heather Humphreys then?
I haven't endorsed anyone. I endorsed Jim Gavin. He is not officially a candidate anymore. Yeah. I'm not going to endorse anybody else.
Don't tell me you're going to spoil your vote in protest.
No, I'm not going to spoil my vote. No, I never have done that either. But look, it's a difficult choice. It's a very narrow field. I think that's unfortunate. I think when the history of 2025 election is written, we'll look back and say, you know, I think the last couple of presidentials, I think we had 7 in 2018, we had 8 in 2011. Really since the multi-party era, that's the way it's been. At the start of the summer, I would have predicted there might be 3 or 4 independents as well as party candidates. What happened in previous elections was Fianna Fáil didn't contest 2011 or 2018, but strong independents with similar values, like Sean Gallagher, for example. I supported Sean in the elections of 2011-2018 as an independent who stood for Fianna Fáil values. You know, I was close to the party. We don't have someone like that on the pitch today, which is a pity.
So some of your party colleagues have gone as far as to say, look, at you know, I wish we had our own candidate, but I will be supporting Heather Humphreys. Are you going that far, or are you keeping your counsel?
Look, I suppose I'm keeping my counsel. I think Heather has a lot of virtues. I think that I had some dealings with her when she was Justice Minister, and I think that she's a bit of steel, which actually hasn't necessarily come through in the debates. I think her campaign, it's only been a few weeks, it's been very short. There's more character to her, I think, than maybe that she's given credit for. As with Catherine Connolly, look, I think she's a woman of integrity, certainly, and consistency. I just wouldn't agree with some of her international perspectives, and I would be a little bit concerned that Catherine Connolly might be advocating a view that's out of step with the government, out of step with where the state wants to be in international relations.
It has to be independent, doesn't it? It's supposed to be politically independent.
Yeah, so the... I welcome the fact that Catherine, in her most recent debate, seemed to roll back a little bit from that and acknowledge that the constitutional framework does oblige the president to work with the government and not to have an independent voice on international relations.
I think the media framed a lot of what she had to say as well, though. So you're forced to deny something that you've something's been framed to you. But from your own party's perspective, wouldn't you love to be sitting there now, whether it's Jim Gavin or someone else sitting there now, you know, backing up even a Pat the Colt Gallagher or some other...
Pat is a great colleague, absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's regrettable for you, isn't it, that you're not in here sort of giving a last push to someone from within your party. Was that an error to sort of go almost unilaterally outside the party and pick someone?
So I suppose, Sean Gallagher was a candidate that came from outside in previous elections. He wasn't a Fianna Fáil candidate, but a number of people, including myself, were happy to support him because we felt he was close to our values. Mary McAleese wasn't a Fianna Fáil. She was a Fianna Fáil candidate, but she wasn't a practicing politician when she was put up. She was a very successful president for two terms. And Douglas Hyde, Carew the Dalig were two Fianna Fáil presidents that didn't come from within the party fold. So historically, there have been people from civic society. When Jim Gavin first presented, and we did have a vote on it, and that's sometimes forgotten.
It ended up almost being a referendum on Micheál Martin's leadership.
If it did, he won hands down.
Well, it was hands down.
Well, it was a majority.
He had one hand down.
It was a strong majority. I mean, sorry, but that's more than Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, People for Profit, Labour. They didn't have any votes. Okay. You know, so we're actually the only party that had a democratic process. I grant it didn't work out the way we would have wanted it to, but we did, and it was open to anybody. And there was various names mentioned over the summer. Any one of those individuals could have put the name forward to the party and sought the nomination. But look, we certainly have to learn. I mean, I'm not happy the way things played out. I think it's very unfortunate. I would love, as you say, to be in here endorsing the Fianna Fáil candidate today. We don't have one in the race. We have two strong women, each of which have slightly different qualities. And I suppose I trust the public. Ultimately, I'm a Democrat and the people are never wrong.
Right. OK, Minister James Lawless, it's a busy visit. Thanks for sparing the time to come in and chat to us. Lots of positive stuff, as you mentioned there, in fairness. It has to be recognised as well. We've had some good announcements. And who's to say maybe we could become some sort of a technological dash AI hub here in the Northwest. All right, Minister, thank you for your time. That's Minister James Lawless back with more after the news.